Thank you for joining us on another adventure in neuromonitoring. Please listen to the end of this cast for our disclaimers.
You're listening to another stimulating adventure in the world of neuromonitoring. This is the IONM for Life podcast with your host, Scott Moore.
He did it first, and he's still doing it. A classic never goes out of style, and those of us who are expanding the intraoperative neuromonitoring footprint today in social media have Joe Hartman, the godfather of neuromonitoring blogging, to thank for it. Dr. Joe Hartman has been an iconic figure in our field for many years. He's an educator, he's a leader, he's a blogger, he's a presenter, and he might be best known for his website, intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com. He just posted up some new content, an article entitled, "The CNIM is Just a Luxury Item, But Not How You Think." It went live on August 22nd of this year, and whether you agree with what Dr. Hartman is saying or not, the founder of intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com is starting conversations about our industry and making us all think a little more. Dr. Joe Hartman, it is an honor to have you on today. I've been following your intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com site for quite a few years now. We're in this series right now, five voices to follow in the neuromonitoring community, and five people that really are just kind of getting out there, taking advantage of social media, just pouring into our community, encouraging one another, learning from one another. And you were one of the first people to market, really. The intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com site, as far as I can tell, was one of the first forays out into social media and blogging, not just to simply teach, but also to kind of discuss our culture and provide opportunities to talk about what it takes to be successful in our field beyond simply just learning the material. So, Joe, thank you for being on.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, I think that just means I'm older than everybody else. So,
I like to say you're the OG of neuromonitoring social media. So you were obviously the first person I really wanted to get on here in this series of the five that we're gonna talk about. Joe's site is intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com. Go check it out. Lots of great material on here. If you're preparing to take the CNIM, there's a lot to learn here. The videos are fantastic. There's practice tests. A lot of resources here. And what's so great about this and what's kind of just outright noble about this, Joe, is, you know, you did this for free. I mean, this is a lot of free material and you invested a lot of time and talent to basically support other people in our field at a stage where they're just newer to the field and still learning. And this is great material, not only for them, but for like kind of veterans such as myself that have been in the field for a number of years. So thank you for everything you do for our field. And it's been just been great kind of following along over the years. And so first of all, let's just talk about how you got into the field of neuromonitoring.
Thank you for those kind words. I went to the University of Florida, knew I wanted to be in healthcare, but didn't know exactly what. Admittedly, I was not the best student at that time. I got good at passing tests and I could do that pretty well. And then I got into my clinicals and I realized that I couldn't retain it. And so I got through that, realized I did not want to do occupational therapy, was deciding between MD, PT, and DC. I made the decision to go to chiropractic school, just felt like it was a more extension of what I was currently learning in the therapy world. I started collecting notes, making my own notes. There's another guy at school who was also very good at doing notes. I took a couple positions as like, you know, the president of clubs. And so I kind of became known as the guy with go-to information for neurology and nutrition for the most part. That got me deep into the neurology world. One of my classmates came out of school. When we came out, this was the second crisis of my life, is financial crisis. Mm-hmm. This is back in the first one. So I opened up my practice. It was very difficult to get on any insurances, very difficult to have any cash payers. So I kind of crash and burn my first practice pretty quickly. One of my classmates was in IONM. I talked to her about what she was doing day to day. There's a lot of overlap. And so I applied to two different companies and decided to take the one out in New Jersey, New York area. And that was about 14 years ago.
14 years. And you've built your way up from to being a team manager, clinical manager, all the way up to being a director of operations. Despite all these responsibilities, you're still putting out great content, a lot of great articles that's kind of talked about how neuromonitoring is continuing to evolve and adapt. Okay, so one of the goals of the IONM for Life project is encourage people in our field to engage the field, engage their colleagues, put themselves out there, Learn from one another. Learn from our mistakes. You know, teach others from our mistakes, and learn and teach each other from our successes. You've got some great examples of that in some of your articles. Now, you mentioned in preparing the blog post that you basically have gotten more out of this project than you put into it, really. And again, you do this of your own volition, you know, for no real compensation, so to speak. And you encourage others to do the same thing. Basically, get out there and put some material out there. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Just being public with your thoughts makes you actually think through it a little bit harder. I mean, nobody wants to look like a buffoon. What I'm putting out there is, in that moment in time, the best version of how I'm thinking through things. At the same time, a lot of the material can be pretty dry. If you went through my website chronologically, the majority of it, the beginning stuff, was just the technical how-tos. And that's what I was working through. I mean, I was studying for the CNIM and the DABNM. And so a lot of it was just note-taking and, you know, helping myself and then others be able to pass that exam. And then after recording, you know, 8.5 hours of that video, I was like, man, that was dry. Made a concerted effort to look to go different directions with the content and kind of integrate big ideas in more conversational tone. You can see later on in the blog, that's the direction it started going. In my own career, I was doing less clinical work. And so my time was spent reading less research papers and maybe more business or operational type stuff. And so you'll see that sprinkled in a lot more frequently towards the chronologically end of the website, and presenting things in consumable chunks, asking people to think through their own career, how they might want to steer the direction of that ship.
A few years ago, I wrote an article called The Red Queen and Neuromonitoring. And it talks about how in healthcare, we have to keep running to stay in place. That idea applies to neuromonitoring as well. We have to keep learning and evolving and specializing in what we do in order to keep a competitive advantage. Joe, you talked a little bit about this, and you sort of talked about the evolution of the eye. Do you want to maybe touch on that and unpack that a little bit for us?
No, I did read that article of yours. Do you remember the big concept of it, which is, I think we're all feeling it right now, just with inflation, right? When inflation was 2%, it was, you know, barely noticeable. Now we're up at 8% and everybody's like, you know, why do I have a $20 hamburger? So that's the same thing with—
Excellent point.
Yeah. It's the same thing with healthcare. And now we got big tech coming into it, and, you know, they move fast and break things. And so just the speed at which we all have to evolve is much quicker than it has been in the past. And so, you know, my dad could work in the same industry for the same company, and that was just kind of the norm. Versus the norm now is, you know, you work for more industries than my dad did companies in his time span. And that just has to do with the environment that we're in. That's a bit of a small snippet of time. And we can look at those small trends, but we can also look at other aspects of systems. And that's what we're all working in, either ourselves or the team we're on or the region we're in or the company we're in or the neuromonitoring or healthcare. Those are all concentric circles around you that get bigger and bigger, but they're all systems. And so if you can figure out how to kind of work in and win in systems, then you can come up with your own strategy to better excel in your own work life. So one of the examples I was giving is we look for things that have a long history of continuing on or success, and they're more likely to be successful in the future than maybe some of these smaller trending blips. And so if we look at literature, you know, Moby Dick will probably be around another decade, centuries, versus, you know, the popular fad diet book. But if we keep going back and look at things that have hundreds of millions of years, now we can look at biology as one example. So with the eye, it keeps evolving and coming up to different animals over time, and it stays. And it's pretty homogenous. You know, there's not a whole lot of difference between a bird's eye or a squid's eye. They all serve the same function of vision. And so we can see that vision is something very valuable, and that the eyeball is something that's well designed to accomplish that goal. We can take that as a note of it's probably something that we all want. We all want vision because it helps us survive over the long term. And in the future, vision is still probably going to be something that's still going to be there. But we also need to be able to adapt. And, you know, this is kind of Darwin's notes here. But if we look at who is the most successful, and we can call that by being able to reproduce or survive, it's the ones that fit the niche that the environment presented itself. Now, we're not talking about eyeballs anymore. We're talking about wings or lungs or different beak sizes. Their ability to survive over time showed that they filled that niche. And again, another system, just like nature, is nature will fill voids. And so if you go out and you spray your grass with a weed killer and it kills off the grass and the weeds and everything, and you let it go, eventually something is going to grow back there. It will fill the void. And so as you are thinking through your ability to work in this industry, you know, you have to have the eyeball, you have to have vision. And so that could be compared to something like doing SSCPs, MEPs, and EMGs. That's something that's probably the most valuable thing that you can offer to an IOM company, because it's something that's going to be on, you know, 80% of the cases that we do. But about 95% of the industry is going to be able to do that. They're all going to have vision, and they're all going to have a similar homogenous eyeball. And so that probably shouldn't be the bar. We should probably be looking at these niches, or the thing that's on the fringe that differentiates us from the others, the contrast. And that's where the big payoffs end up being. Those are the ones that who continue to survive in their local environments and can thrive, have these differentiations through evolution or adaptation. And so knowing that if there's a void that's going to come around the corner, that it's going to get filled, then how do you prepare yourself to be the one that can quickly evolve into that? And what skill sets are you building? And what voids are you looking to fill? If you're not into sales, then don't practice getting into sales. I mean, everybody should have a little bit of sales, because that's what we do every day. But that probably shouldn't be something you sharpen your skills and broaden your knowledge base around. If it's going to be being a pediatrics specialist, then you know you need to get those opportunities and understand pediatrics versus adults. Those are some of the big ideas that you can take away. I guess the big idea out of that is, when you're early on in your career, work on the eyeball, work on vision, because everyone needs it. But then as you progress, look for areas that are more scarce and valuable to your company or to your team, whatever it might be, and then look to fill that void using the mantra of different is better than better most of the time.
Different is better than better most of the time. I love that. Actually, this has been a successful strategy for me in the past. And if you really want to develop from maybe a business development standpoint, if you want to develop into a new niche or a new market, like, have the skill set ready to go. Learn the skill set before you need it. For example, if a surgeon all of a sudden wants to start using D-Waves, just as an example, know D-Waves before the surgeon asks you, hey, is this something we can do? So take advantage of the learning opportunities. They're out there. Our professional societies offer a lot of these training seminars. For example, if maybe a new ENT surgeon shows up in your market, maybe it's the doorway to getting into a new hospital, working with new surgeon, have those ENT skills, be ready to show up and say, we can run the NIM, we can use our own equipment, we can monitor your thyroids, and have those skill sets ready to go and be able to present yourself as a polished product and say, we're ready to take advantage of the situation. So the more you learn and the more ready you are before the opportunity shows up, the more successful you can be. So I think these are great concepts you're telling us about right now.
Most people can handle a NIMS. If you can handle a Cadwell, you can handle a NIMS. That's easy stuff. But can you explain it, articulate to a surgeon versus the OR director versus the CEO? That's the difference. Better and different is, can you adapt your speech to different listeners? And so that might be the skill set that you would pick up that differentiates you from the group. And so now all of a sudden, you're the one that's getting bonuses for getting new business type stuff. And that's what you start to be known as by your teammates or your company. And so if that's the niche that you're trying to fill, then that's the starting point that you would look at and say, okay, what else can I build? I now have a good communication skills. What's next? Maybe it's marketing or drawing together materials. Maybe, you know, if you're a small company, there's a lot more voids to fill and a lot more hats you can wear versus a big company where once you get kind of in your niche, then you got to really drill down and become, you know, world-class at it. There's, you know, different skill sets for different opportunities there.
You mentioned different hats, and I absolutely love that article. You can find the different hats article that Joe wrote on intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com. I think it's under the something different section. You can probably find it on the sidebar. That's an excellent article that kind of talks about, once you get your CNM, once you get established, I mean, there's different roles you can take on in our field, ways to differentiate yourself, specialize, and grow your career. Lots of opportunities to grow your career in the field of neuromonitoring if you're willing to take on different challenges and see a need and find a way to meet it. So definitely go check that article out. Joe, wanted to move on now to talking about creating awareness and acceptance of intraoperative neuromonitoring in healthcare, in surgery. We've gone a long ways in pushing awareness of our field in healthcare. We're starting to make some inroads with patient population. I would say we're not there yet. We're pushing the line of scrimmage forward, making more people aware of what we do, what the value that we provide, making surgery safer, lowering healthcare costs, all the things, all the values of neuromonitoring. What are some things you think we should be doing as a field, as an industry, to start to maybe take our place at the table, so to speak?
Yeah. So this is part of the reason why I did the website. And so I was just having discussions with other people that were coming from different backgrounds or different opportunities. You know, sometimes you can be with a small group of people and they could just be just a wealth of knowledge. I had that opportunity where I was with a neurosurgeon from China who was also DABNM, and I could ask him off the wall questions that he would be able to take a surgeon's perspective on. And so that gave me a new perspective on monitoring that I didn't have at that point. And, you know, perspectives like gaining ADIQ points. So that was definitely helpful for me. And now, you know, I'm in a bigger group. And so I can ask more people that have different experiences and get more well-rounded answers to kind of bring that all home. The majority of what I was looking to accomplish and what I hope is other people's goals as well is making more competent people out there that can have better conversations with the surgeons, the anesthesiologists, and their hospital partners, providing better patient care so that we have better clinical outcomes. And all of that can help improve the value that we're delivering to the hospitals and our patients. That has both clinical versus, you know, the patient's safety and being able to walk out of the operating room at a much higher percentage of the time, as well as business consequences, where we need to be able to prove value in these cases that we're doing to not only the surgeons that are thinking of using us or wanting to use us, but as well as the third-party payers that are incentivized to have people to deny payment. So we have to continue this march of towards progress of not only demonstrating in the literature, but also having people that are able to have those conversations from all the companies, because if one company's able to have it and get paid for it, but the others aren't able to push those same buttons, then everyone's going to lose out because they're going to say, well, we're denying these people. We can deny you as well. It's taking away from the competition side of things. There's always going to be competition, and that's the way it should be. That's what actually helps us accomplish these goals. But looking as a larger organization of companies looking to grow the pie, expand the use of IONM to different surgeries or more modalities being used in the surgeries that we're currently doing, and expanding that pie versus the winner take all mentality where it's stepping over anybody to get ahead. And then that pie is very small.
There is a balance between we need to compete with each other, company to company, to make our product leaner, meaner, more efficient, but also we're kind of all in this together where we're kind of working to create a footprint and some acceptance and inroads with the insurance companies. Because if we don't get paid, it's next to impossible to do what we do, but also increasing the value by, again, adding those modalities, learning that the motors, you know, the literature is supporting this idea that the comprehensive monitoring package where we're doing the sensory, the motors, the free run EMG, the triggered EMG, using it all together comprehensively adds the value, makes the surgery that much safer by providing more useful information for the surgeon. So we get that buy-in. If we get the buy-in with the surgeons, if we get the buy-in with the insurance companies, we can have a greater impact on making surgery safer and just improving patient care. And the way we do that, again, is equipping and empowering the person at the line of scrimmage, which at the end of the day is the neuro monitoring personnel in the operating room communicating with the surgeon. So at the end of the day, the more we can do to equip and inspire and encourage that person, they're really the ambassador for our field at the end of the day. They're the person that the surgeons see that interacts with the patient. So we need to make sure that everyone who's stepping in the operating room has the tools and the confidence they need to obviously, you know, to do a great job, but have those conversations, be able to draw on the literature, being able to draw on sound science, basically say why what we do is so important. Programs like what you're doing, Joe, with the neuromonitoring blog, intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com, is so valuable because, again, it's a way of equipping our first contact with our field, with the surgeons, with the healthcare system. So really do appreciate that.
If I go back and look over my career, there's a couple of things that have been the most helpful for me, and writing my thoughts in public is definitely up there. It's given me opportunities where people reach out to me just to have conversations. And so I honestly, I'm on the phone at least once a week talking about neuromonitoring or career advancement or whatever it might be. So it's been a valuable asset to my own career and learning and knowledge base and just getting a good feel for the overall industry across the country from different aspects. So I would encourage, you don't have to build a website like I did. I mean, that was kind of a painstakingly learning process. It is easier today than it was then, but get on LinkedIn, share thoughts there or comments, whatever it might be. It's one of those things where in the short run, it's going to feel like you're just talking out in the space. But after a while, you start getting some of the feedback and you can see it kind of building up.
Exactly. Just get out there, engage one another, engage your colleagues, learn from one another. Learn from other people that you work with. Learn from the anesthesia department. You know, learn from obviously the hospital administrations, the surgeons, and just, you know, the more you engage with those that work alongside you and with you, the better you're going to make them, the better you're going to make yourself. And the more we can inspire one another to kind of get out there and put content out there and keep that positive cycle going. Joe, you're one of the first people to kind of start that in motion. So thank you very much for everything you've done. I look forward to reading more of your material. And again, if you're new to the field of neuromonitoring, if you're getting ready to take your CNM exam, there's great CNM prep material at intraoperativeneuromonitoring.com. Joe Hartman, our guest today, is responsible for this, and he's done a great job. And even if you're a veteran to this field, it's worth checking this site out. There's lots of great articles. Joe's done a great job of talking about where our field is going, the trends that are occurring in our field, and maybe what you need to do in addition to simply learning the material to like be successful in our field, differentiate yourself. Go check it out. Again, like as Joe's encouraging you, please go out and engage your colleagues, get on LinkedIn, make some posts, create some content. It's okay to fail at first because, you know, at the end of the day, we learn from our mistakes. We learn from each other's mistakes. So this has been a great conversation. Joe, I want to thank you for being on today and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Scott.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IONM for Life podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please remember to like, subscribe, and tell a friend. Join us next time for more stimulating adventures.
This podcast is not affiliated with any medical device or neuromonitoring company. At the present time, the IONM for Life podcast does not accept any advertising money. All opinions expressed on the IONM for Life podcast do not necessarily represent the views and opinions held by myself or anyone associated with the IONM for Life podcast. This podcast should not be used in any legal capacity whatsoever, including but not limited to establishing standard of care in a legal sense or as a basis for expert witness testimony. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions made on the podcast. I welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors.